proudly through hunting grounds. Who shall win? Blessed stag or mortal king? Pass through the winding woods we pull, flash of a tail within the bull. For the stag is swift and the stag is fleet, and he hears the sound of thundering feet. Hear then, gone, landsman cry, the hunt is on. It is more than sport between beast and man, for the stag is sacred to our clan. And we dare not risk the forest's ire, for if we can't kill, best not fight. Hear then, gone, landsman cry, the hunt is on. Sound the horn loudly, call the hounds. We will ride proudly through hunting grounds. Who shall win? Blessed stag or mortal king? The death be clean as life's release, so we show our honor to the beast. For your own death you will understand, when you hold life's blood within your hand. Respect the code that nature made, for we know not when the shadows fall and the huntsman comes to take us all. Hear then, gone, landsman cry, the hunt is on. Sound the horn loudly, call the hounds. We will ride proudly through hunting grounds. Who shall win? Blessed stag or mortal king? We are poor men gone, landsmen cry, the hunt is on. The hunt is on.
Welcome to the Yes, the hunt is on. The hunt is on right here at the Solar Storm on RenegadeBroadcasting.com. I encourage you to check out all of the great hosts here at the network and support all of those organizations out there that you think are doing a good job in the struggle. Folks, I have a show for you here tonight without a guest. I've been doing a lot of different interviews here recently, and it really is about time that I did a show where I just talked to you all about what's going on with me. I was actually planning on having Payday Monsanto on for turn show, but he had to cancel. So he might call in, but it's just going to be me here tonight and your calls as well. If you want to get on the air and let me know what you're up to, what you're thinking about, please do. 347-633-9657. I will be taking calls throughout the show. Be sure to press 1, or else I will assume that you are just listening. Unless I get really desperate for somebody to talk to, then I'll just make you talk to me. I hope you've been enjoying the interviews I've been doing here on the network. I think they've been some pretty interesting guests and some important conversations. I'll be having some more guests on in the coming months, of course. I'm going to be having Thomas Goodrich back next month after I release Hellstorm. Oh, it's coming together beautifully, very nicely. I've had to sit and tweak this documentary. Of course, all of the heavy, you know, labor that went into it, writing the script, getting everything together with all the voice actors and all that. But it's, you know, finding all the clips and everything, getting all the music, that was a huge undertaking. Editing it all together, wow, that's a lot. But I've been going through and tweaking this thing for a long time now, and adding in some really cool graphics and everything. The documentary is going to be very powerful. You can check out what's already been done at hellstormdocumentary.com. I really hope you all watch this, even though it's a difficult subject to get through. It's going to be well done, and it's not over the top in terms of just being gruesome and gory. At this point, many of us really are desensitized to this type of material, and that is certainly the case for myself. I've become very desensitized to this material. You have to be. You can't expend all of those emotions day after day working on a project like this. Though sometimes it really just does hit me, kind of washes over me. And it's not usually when I see, you know, pictures of dead Germans or things like that. It's more when I see the beautiful pictures of Germany, you know, and its people before the war, struggling to make it during the war, just seeing this strong, vivacious people and knowing what happened to them, knowing how what happened to them is celebrated in our mainstream culture. Very few people even speak up about it. Somebody had posted a link in the chat recently about Pat Buchanan bringing up Dresden just the other day at this roundtable that's done on PBS. It's probably about 30 seconds of talking about it. And, you know, it's great to get whatever exposure we can. The range that he gives for the dead is pretty interesting and telling as well. He says it's somewhere between 35,000 and maybe 300,000 or what. I don't remember the exact figures. Now, real estimates put the death toll well above 300,000. Real honest ones. But the media just loves to come out recently and talk about 25,000. Yes, the city packed with up to maybe about 1.5 million defenseless Germans, was completely destroyed, and miraculously, only 25,000 lived. They bombed it, and then they firebombed it, and then they firebombed it, and they firebombed it, then they strafed it, then they bombed it, then they strafed it. And yet only 25,000 Germans died there. But it was necessary because you had to break the will of the German people, just to end this war, to defeat this evil, evil regime. Now, let's see. I've got to, of course, update my description of my show and the links and everything because I'm not having payday on anymore. Got to think up a title for this episode. We'll see. You know, I'd like to get on to an article I just posted over at Renegade Tribune. I don't get to write all that much because I'm very busy these days, but I did feel compelled to write a little bit about the sacred swastika. Now, the swastika is a big no-no. You don't go out in public wearing the swastika. A lot of pro-white and even revisionist websites, they don't want the swastika anywhere around. It'll turn people off. It's been too demonized. Don't even touch it. But there's a lot of power there. Even all of the negative publicity it has gotten has given it this kind of even dark power as well. It's feared. It's respected. It is a symbol of awe, and it has deep connections to our people. So I'm going to actually jump into this little piece I put together and deal with the sacred swastika. And then after that, I'm going to touch upon a whole host of issues, including the Baltimore riots, other anti-white nonsense coming from the media, and all sorts of drama and whatnot. If you want to call in, as I said, at any time, I will take your call, at least whenever I go out over and check out the studio. Here we go, the political power of the sacred swastika. Quote from Confucius, "Signs and symbols rule the world, not words nor laws." The most important and impactful symbol of the 20th century was the swastika. Its resurgence into the public consciousness was brought about through the rise of the NSDAP. Even after the seeming death of the Nazi regime, the symbol continues to retain its power, though it has been the target of a vicious smear campaign, as it is now associated with every evil imaginable in our Judaized world. As the secular power of the American flag, the British flag, the Soviet hammer and sickle, and the religious power of the Christian cross and the Star of David continue to wane, the swastika will rise from the ashes of recent history and once again inspire our folk. This ancient symbol united our people for thousands of years, drew together disparate European folk again in the 20th century as they fought to slay the red beast from the east, and will once again be a symbol around which the new Aryan folk rally in the 21st century, if only privately at first. We'll argue that the symbol has been demonized beyond all repair, that it needs to be put aside as we make moderate appeals to the masses, and that we cannot fall into the trap of neo-Nazism. But to neglect the swastika would be to handicap ourselves greatly. Although it seems the NSDAP was able to bring the swastika to the forefront of the world's attention, it could be argued that it was actually the swastika that brought about the rise of the NSDAP. So consider that. Did the NSDAP bring the swastika to our attention, or did the swastika bring the NSDAP to our attention? Remember that quote from Confucius. I am going to read a little excerpt from Mein Kampf, of course, written by Adolf Hitler in 1923. "The organization of our troop monitor, of our monitor troop, clarified a very important question. Up till then, the movement had no party insignia and no party flag. The absence of such symbols not only had momentary disadvantages, but was intolerable for the future. Party comrades lacked any outward sign of their common bond." Hitler then wrote about how he attended a mass Marxist demonstration. "A sea of red flags, red scarves, and red flowers. I have, in our movement, always upheld the standpoint that it is a true good fortune for the German nation to have lost the old flag." This was, you can look up what the old flag looks like. Go to the article itself. I'm actually not going to read all of this excerpted text, but he says that, talks about the importance of having this kind of rallying point. "The question of the new flag, that is, its appearance, occupied us intensely in those days. From all sides came suggestions. The new flag had to be equally a symbol of our own struggle, since on the other hand it was expected also to be highly effective as a poster. An effective insignia can, in hundreds of thousands of cases, give the first impetus towards interest in a movement. For this reason, we had to reject all suggestions of identifying our movement through a white flag with the old state. White is not a stirring color. It is suitable for chaste virgins clubs, but not for world-changing movements in a revolutionary epoch. I myself came out for the retention of the old colors, not only because as a soldier they are to me the holiest thing I know, nevertheless I was obliged to reject without exception the numerous designs which poured in, which for the most part had drawn the swastika into the old flag." And folks, the old flag is the tricolor with black at the top, white in the middle, and red at the bottom. I myself, meanwhile, after innumerable attempts, had laid down a final form, a flag with a red background, a white disc, and a black swastika in the middle. After long trials, I also found a definite proportion between the size of the flag and the size of the white disc, as well as the shape and thickness of the swastika, and this remained final. And what a powerful symbol their flag truly was. The swastika, very, very important symbol, but the way they made that flag around it was just, that was something. One could even view the famous flag of the Third Reich through the esoteric lens of alchemy, an occult science in which the black swastika represents the first stage, Negredo. The white circle represents the second stage, Albedo, and the red rectangle represents the third stage, Rubedo. Hitler transformed base material, which was the Weimar Republic, into gold, which was the Third Reich, in only 3 years, and even less, to be honest. And moving beyond choice of color, Ulrich of England deals with this subject of the swastika itself. And reading another quote here, what inspired Hitler to use the swastika as a symbol for the NSDAP was its use by the Thule Gesellschaft organization, since there were many connections between them and the DAP. From 1919 until the summer of 1921, Hitler used the special National Socialist Library of Dr. Friedrich Krohn, a very active member of the Thule Gesellschaft. Said that terribly. Dr. Krohn was also the dentist from Sternberg who was named by Hitler in Mein Kampf as a designer of a flag very similar to the one that Hitler designed in 1920. During the summer of 1920, the first party flag was shown at Lake Tegernsee. These homemade early flags are not preserved, and this one was the Ortsgruppe München flag was generally regarded as the first party flag. And of course, they had that blood flag, which was soaked in the blood of their martyrs who had died in the beer hall, Putscht. I'm so bad with German words, and yet it fascinates me so. The use of the swastika in German occult orders was part of a great revival in which the folks started lurking to their past for the inspiration that could lead them into a glorious future. And this part here is from NorseMythology.org. Why did the National Socialist Movement of early to mid-20th century Germany adopt the swastika of all symbols as its own central icon? During the Romantic period in the 19th century, the peoples of Europe took a great deal of interest in rediscovering their pagan heritage. Additionally, the English were fascinated by questions of what exactly made them English. The French were fascinated by questions of what exactly made them French, and so on. Perhaps nowhere were these trends more pronounced than in Germany. Nowhere else did they achieve the same level of cultural prominence and social organization. Nowhere else did they become as explicitly nationalistic, and nowhere else did these tendencies last well into the 20th century. In the early days of the 20th century, Germany was awash with so-called Völkisch groups, who combined a kind of ethnic nationalism with occult spiritualism. It was flourishing at the margins of society. The Völkisch groups and the people who comprised them were a very diverse and dynamic bunch. Some were relatively private and mostly focused on esoteric spiritual pursuits, while some others were overtly political, with various and often competing agendas in that regard. Sounds kind of similar to our own ragtag group, doesn't it? What the Völkisch groups generally had in common, however, was an insistence that the unifying forces of German ethnicity and cultural traditions were things to be celebrated, as well as a notion that looking to the past history of the German people provided clues to how Germans should live in the present day. The swastika is one of the oldest and most widespread of humanity's symbols. It can be found on artifacts thousands of years old from several continents. While it was used by the Norse and other Germanic peoples from the beginnings of those societies, the swastika is far from just a Germanic symbol. It was one of the central symbols of the Proto-Indo-European society, the society that gave rise to the Germanic, Celtic, Slavic, Greek, and Roman societies in Europe, as well as Hindu society in India, which accounts for its use by both ancient and modern-day Hindus and Buddhists. Nor was it an exclusively Indo-European symbol, however. It can also be found in the indigenous art of the American Indians, Sami, and plenty of other peoples across the world. I myself would argue that that could possibly be traced back to Aryan origins, as they did have contact with the Indians, the Samis, and others, even going into Africa. And there's an interesting image I have in this post at renegadetribune.com. It's from an 1898 Yale University study, and it just traces the use of the swastika across a number of different continents. As it was used by the Germanic peoples, the swastika was so closely tied to other symbols that the sun wheel and the Thor's hammer, that the three were practically interchangeable. That's interesting. Saying that the swastika, the sun wheel, or the Celtic cross, and the Thor's hammer. You could also tie it to the black sun, of course. It's a very, very similar symbol representing a similar concept. The sun wheel, like the swastika, was found throughout the Indo-European world, that is, Bronze Age and Iron Age Europe, and parts of Asia. Among the Celts, for example, the two symbols are generally found in the same archaeological context, occurring next to or in place of a depiction of a sky god in engravings and statues. This suggests two things: that the symbols were seen to be synonymous, and indeed their visual forms themselves would suggest that they're simply variations on a common image, and that they had an especially close association with solar and celestial powers. Now, to visualize how the Celtic cross and the swastika are similar, take a look at the logo of the Thule Gesellschaft, and you'll see the circular swastika. And if you just fill in the gaps in the circle of the circular swastika, you'll see that it just makes a Celtic cross. Or similarly, if you just add in a little gaps to a Celtic cross, you make a circular swastika. And this represents many things, including, of course, the four seasons of the solar cycle. These same qualities are also found among the Germanic people. In runic inscriptions, which often included non-runic symbols, the sun wheel and swastika appear to have meant the same thing. As for the connection with the sky god, for the Norse, the two symbols were hardly distinguishable from a third common symbol, the Mjolnir, or Thor's hammer. Thor was the principal sky god of the Norse peoples during the Viking Age, having apparently taken over this role from Tyr over the course of the centuries. In the Norse tales, his hammer was used to defend the god's celestial stronghold, Asgard, from the giants, the forces of chaos, decay, and destruction. Ritualistically, the symbol of Thor's hammer was used to consecrate and bless a marriage, a person, an endeavor, a piece of land, or anything else that one wanted to be protected from the forces of cosmic order. To be protected by the forces of cosmic order and health against those of anti-cosmic chaos. And back to my own text. To protect the cosmic order of the folk from the anti-cosmic chaos of communism, Hitler launched Operation Barbarossa, which means actually Red Beard. Barbarossa means Red Beard, which has a direct tie-in to the god of thunder, who is well known for his bright red beard. However, this red beard is often missing in representations of the deity, especially recently. You can think of the Thor movies put out by Marvel. And I show this painting from the 19th century. I forget who the author is. I should have marked that. Very famous one of Thor and his chariot being pulled by the goats. The blonde-haired Thor fighting against the giants. And you'll notice he's holding up that Thor's hammer in one hand, and in his belt he has a swastika emblem. Isn't that interesting? So again, the Thor's hammer and the swastika being tied together. Now, some might not immediately see how the symbols, the Thor's hammer and the swastika, are visually related. But you got to understand that Thor's hammer is often swinging. So if you were to swing that Thor's hammer in a big circle, or if Thor was to do so, rather, you could kind of view it like a big fan. You know, and you could take little kind of snapshots of it, and it would look a little bit like the, you know, or it could be represented by something like the Black Sun or the swastika. Swastika could basically be representing Thor's hammer going around, or even the Earth going around the sun. Same concept. Symbols can be so beautiful sometimes. Kurt Vonnegut, who was firebombed in Dresden by the Bai. These symbols are ours. They have great power to inspire social change, in particular the sun wheel and the swastika. They instill awe, fear, respect, and much more. As long as we allow our enemies to control the use and meaning of our sacred symbols, we are under their control. It's time to awaken the power of our people, shake off the chains of our enslavement, and deal out some divine justice upon our enemies. Quote from Adolf Hitler, if you want to shine like sun, first you have to burn like it. I love that quote. So what do you think? What do you think about the swastika as a symbol? Is it near and dear to you as well? What do you think about its use in our struggle, privately or publicly? What do you think about my arguments as to why we need to take control of these symbols of ours? The Celtic cross, I think, can be more effective publicly right now because it's not as smeared as the swastika, but it represents basically the same thing. And anybody in the know knows what it means when you got it waving around on a flag or a poster or whatever. And even those who aren't in the know kind of understand that it seems pretty European. The Celtic cross. Thor's hammer. That's another good one to have maybe around your neck. I haven't worn my Thor's hammer in a while. I have a torque, though. The Celts of Europe wore torques around their necks. And I like going out in public with a torque around my neck, this big metallic semi-circle. You know, it definitely it's not something people see all the time. But again, people in the know might approach you about it. So, folks, call in if you have something to chime in about here. 347-633-9657. It's too bad we didn't have any big swastikas out there in Baltimore, right? Actually, a couple days ago, I think maybe even just yesterday, on the St. Louis courthouse steps, there was a protest, a Free Gary Yarbrough protest. A renegade caller, Wodean Krieger, was there holding up a big diversity equals white genocide banner. I think it was organized by the Aryan Nations. I forget their full name, something about Jesus, white Christ, Aryan Christ, Christian Jesus, something. It's a long name. But they were there with their t-shirts that I think had the Black Sun and the swastika, and they're really in your face, and they had counter demonstrators, Black Lives Matter demonstrators there opposing them. I haven't really seen too much about it, but it looks like the media that did report on it did not really show the sign, the diversity equals white genocide sign. I think they've really had an order come down from the top that diversity equals white genocide is to be kept as secret as possible. That's the secret formula. That is the secret formula. They're gonna try to say, no, diversity equals our greatest strength. Diversity equals a bright future for everyone. Diversity equals equality. But when you really lay it out in that very concise formula of diversity equals white genocide, it plants a seed in people's mind, especially then when they see the maps about how diversity is taking over America. Here is a clip. I haven't listened to this yet, but I did link the story, and it sounds good. This is from an MSNBC guest on the Melissa Harris Perry show. My favorite commentator. I should really just watch MSNBC for a whole day. That'd be quite an experience. So this MSNBC guest says, you don't have to be a white person to have white supremacy. Let's listen in.
It feels to me like part of what's happening here is that, so, you know, when I say biking while black, we've talked about walking while black. Yeah. You know, again, in the case of Freddie Gray, who, I mean, it's just like even just watching the video and seeing and hearing his agony, I just keep wondering, is there no benefit of the doubt given to a black person in public space? Because that, if that is true, if looking at an officer in the eye, or if riding an expensive bike in a black body is a thing that inherently generates suspicion, then that, even more than the incarceration state, is the new Jim Crow. That is what Jim Crow was, that black bodies in public space are inherently suspicious.
Yes, yes. I want to mention two things. One, to a point you brought up earlier, speaking about the political leaders in Baltimore being black. And I think that white supremacy is so insidious and ingrained in this institution that you don't even have to have a white person around, right, to have white supremacy play out.
Just pause for a second.
Sure.
Because what you just said there, I think, is gonna be difficult for some folks to hear, because the discourse of white supremacy can often be an academic discourse that for ordinary folks listening at home, they might say, whoa, did she just call all white people racist?
Right.
So help us out and kind of tease that out a little bit.
Sure, I'll try my best.
I recognize that it is hard on a TV show, but just to...
Yes. Yeah. With an institution like American policing that I believe is founded on anti-blackness, on slave patrols, there are things that are so institutionally ingrained in terms of how we police communities that are anti-black. They may not say specifically in the language and the words that go stop and target black people, but when you do this type of proactive policing, much akin to stop and frisk and vertical patrols like that happened at the Pink House, these disproportionately infect black and brown and poor communities.
Yeah.
So these things are not only racist, they're also classist. And this would be almost comical, this story here in Tampa, if it wasn't so scary.
Yeah.
You have 11-year-olds, boys as young as 11, being stopped on their bikes in Tampa. This isn't building trust.
Yeah.
This is introducing children to the criminal justice system at an early age.
Right. And this.
All right. All right. So you don't have to be a white, you don't have to have a white person to have white supremacy. You don't have to have a white person to have white supremacy. So when all the white people are gone, maybe they'll still be talking about how white supremacy is still extant on the planet, ruining things for them. The reason why they can't get ahead. We killed all the white people and we're even worse off. Well, who's to blame? Those dead white people. That's what they're going to say, yeah. So it looks like what has transpired in Baltimore is only too typical of what has been transpiring all around the country. Black mob violence, race riots, that are incited by an anti-white media. Happened in Ferguson. It's happened in a lot of places. Kentucky, you just don't hear about it in the mainstream media. Black riots have been going on for decades and decades, and they've been only ramping up recently with all of these black activists, race hustlers, and Black Panthers in positions of power. And now they're openly talking about just murdering white people, being terrorists to white people. And that's what they're doing in Baltimore. They're terrorizing white people, pulling people from cars, jumping on people's hoods, smashing in windows, looting stores, killing, There's a Black Lives Matter protester who was recently charged with forcing a mother into sex slavery. And it's being funded by Jews like George Soros. This is absolutely sickening. And CNN last night, I've been trying to find the video for this, but I can't find it anywhere. CNN last night had reported only briefly on the race riots that were going on in Baltimore because they were covering what is termed nerd prom. The White House correspondents that are, 40 miles away in Washington, D.C., called nerd prom for some reason this year. And they're just telling jokes, yucking it up. Black-on-white violence galore. Orioles fans being detained in the stadium for public safety because there's a chimp out going on outside. And CNN only briefly mentioned that you can go online if you want to check out what's happening there. But we're going to be covering this Barack Obama's laughs and the other idiots at nerd prom. That's where our cameras will be focused. You don't need to see the black violence. Don't worry about that. There was also an RT woman, a producer, who was filming for Ruptly, their live streaming service, filming these feral Negroes, and she was robbed. I find it somewhat appropriate, since RT has been all over the Black Lives Matter, Ferguson protests, system of white supremacy, standing up the system. Of course, one of their reporters gets robbed. Who in their right mind would send out a woman into that chaos to film these people? Are they really that naive? All right, here's the announcement that came out from in the Orioles stadium. Due to an ongoing public safety issue, the mayor of Baltimore City and the BCPD have asked all fans to remain inside the ballpark until further notice. Thank you. Wow. And I did find the video from CNN. More black talking heads on the television. They only increased in the past few years. I mean, now certain networks are only black faces, it seems. And if you do see any white faces, probably a Jew. Or somebody that's servicing them. All right, here is that clip from CNN. It's only a minute long.
You have to make a decision. What are you going to do with this 2 hours of time? And CNN made its decisions and it's sticking to its plan and so forth. If people want to know, yes, 12 people were arrested. The Baltimore police have tweeted that. You know, you can find that out now. You can find a live feed if you actually want to watch what's going on. It sounds like complete chaos. The cops apparently are keeping people in Camden Yards where the Orioles game is winding down. They don't want more people going into the streets.
We don't have that confirmed
right now. No, none of this is confirmed, but this is all what I'm seeing on Twitter. And so you can find out, you know, what you want to find out. And, you know, and something else is going on. The most powerful man in the world is going to tell some jokes. Now, that's an odd stance, but it was an odd set of circumstances when he told jokes on the same day that they were killing bin Laden.
We didn't know that.
We don't control a lot of this stuff. You know, we sort of make our best choices, and we'll catch up. People will be informed. They'll find out all about the scholarship winners. They'll find out all of what happened in the streets of Baltimore by this time tomorrow.
You know what the biggest joke about that is? Him calling Barack Obama the most powerful person in the world. Yeah, that's the funniest joke of the night. All right, a white man was attacked by a bunch of juvenile dindus. Let's go to this clip. Just to peer into what's going on. This Black Lives Matter protest. All right, it's not playing for some reason. Possibly because I have ad block on. Oh, whatever. 61-year-old man He went out to break up a fight between two girls. Guessing they were black girls. Man, what a... Come on. Come on, guy. You don't need to go break up that fight. You don't need to be the hero. And then, of course, he was beaten to a pulp. He had to get a blood transfusion. His blood in his brain. He had to get stitches. His face. His nose was broken. His broken ribs. Or he got his nose stitched up. His broken ribs. Hey, he's in a coma. Black Lives Matter. Kill Whitey. Oh, it's sickening. It is absolutely sickening. Here's a story coming out of Breitbart. Warzone. Baltimore erupts into violence, chaos as Black Lives Matter riots rage. So it turns out that a family had been, I'm not going to read this, but a family had been stopped by these rioters. This is a white family. They beat the car hood in, ripped open the passenger door in search of prey. This is scary. Coming soon to a city near you. We'll have another dindu who gets shot by the police. The media will be all over it. And they'll get big riots going. And white people will suffer terribly. And it will all be blamed on them. Nothing can be blamed on the black people. They are always the victims. Just like the Jews. Jews never did nothing wrong. We didn't do nothing. Jews, the original didn't do nothings. Just like, what's that guy's name? Murdered Mary Fagan. Leo Frank. Leo Frank. I would have ripped his pencil right off. The pencil factory manager. That's the inspiration for the ADL. Oh, stop defaming us. We don't molest and rape and murder children. No, wait. Actually, you know what? Recent evidence suggests that a lot of you do. You even do it to your own kids. It's not just a Jewish thing, though. All races have sick people. Plenty within the white race. Like to just get rid of them from the gene pool. Luckily, it seems many of them are doing that themselves. All right. Let's see if there's anything else that is important that can be reported on from Baltimore. I haven't been too up to date about what has transpired this past day. So if you know something I don't, call in, let me know. I haven't been able to follow this too closely. Yeah, another story, somewhat related. Zimmerman is blaming Obama for the racial fallout over the Trayvon Martin death. Could you imagine that? If you had to kill somebody in self-defense, the law found that you were completely in the right, that you had to stand your ground because you were in jeopardy of losing your life. And the president comes out and says, that boy could have been my son. And then later comes out and says, no. Could have been me. That could have been me. This is just one example amongst many in which race trumps truth in our society. Now, I'm tired of it. I hate even having to cover these things. I guess I don't have to, but I feel compelled to because it's so in your face. They're trying to start a complete race war. They are. They have started a race war. They're trying to fan the flames to get it completely full blown. Especially, of course, at a time when Jewish power is being questioned by many, many people, where American politicians are completely hated. When white patriots are getting organized, making compelling arguments. Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Jew, Jew, Jew. Jew let the dogs out. I mean, too many examples to even go through here. Rabbis out there at the Ferguson protests. That should tell you enough. George Soros funding what's going on. Imagine if there's a guy with $30 million who is giving it to our activists to go out there and make a scene. Imagine if we did what these Black Lives Matter protesters are doing, the rioters. Yeah, I think the media would be a little critical of that. So, folks, I do want you to call in 347-633-9657. I don't have too many topics laid out here for the night. Guess I could get into some of the drama that goes on in this whole thing. People come and go, they come back. People talk and talk and talk and talk. Everybody's critical of each other. I'm critical of a lot of people, that's for sure. I'm suspicious of a lot of people. I don't always talk about it. I think it's amazing how well wedge issues are able to make their way into our discourse, how much we bite on it. For example, this whole men going their own way, not just anti-feminist now it seems, it's just anti-female discourse that is coming from quite a few allegedly pro-white, anti-Semite type people. Yeah, now's the time just to go after women. Screw going after the people who are actually, you know, causing whatever terrible characteristics are now present in both men and women. Let's go and rip apart women. Say they don't even have a place at the discussion. Who cares what you have to say? You're just for making babies and cooking. Get back in the kitchen. Really? That's productive. That's not going to drive a wedge right into the heart of our people. We need our women. Our women can make appeals in ways that our men never can. And I have been using this word wedge. And let's break it down. Reverse it, J-E-W. Reversed is W-E-J. A wedge to divide us apart and conquer and rule us. What I am going to do is find a song to play and then come back and jump into some other topics here. I don't really want to get stuck on movement drama, the wedge issues, but okay, while I find this song, I'll get a little bit more into it. I'll let you have some more of my thoughts on this. There are a bunch of guys who are allegedly against, I guess, for white people, against modernity, against, you know, the power structure, against cultural Marxism or whatever. Some of these guys go by neo-reactionary. It's a movement that's basically founded on the ideals of this Jewish guy named Moldbug. Yeah. Oh, our great savior Moldbug. Fantastic. Fantastic. And these guys are pretty kosher. I haven't looked into it too much. I have read a neo-reactionary text. An ebook. Some of it's kind of interesting. It's definitely one of those reactionary camps that's there to catch people who reject this current system. It seems to be somewhat tied into the men going their own way thing a bit, MGTOW. And if you can't see that this is completely gay and Jewish, you got some blinders on. MGTOW, man. We're gonna be manly men. We're gonna go off by ourselves and do our own thing and be manly men. No thanks. Count me out, guys. There's a time and place for that. Going for a retreat, working out in the gym, training. Yeah. Sure, there's need for man time. But men just going their own way? No thanks. No thanks, guys. Yeah, that's really going to help fulfill the 14 words, too. Yeah, not having children, going and doing your own thing with some men. Yeah, no thanks. It's amazing how many gay men purport to know exactly what men need to be all about. How is it that some of these gay men can think that they're the epitome of manliness? Listen, if you're putting your penis in another man's pooper, you're not a man in my book. It's as simple as that. And actually, if you're the man who's getting it in the pooper, wow, you're going to call yourself manly? Have fun with your prolapse. What the hell's wrong with this whole thing? I don't want to get too down on the movement, but we need to completely extricate ourselves from some of these people who are not our allies. And a lot of these kind of people that I'm talking about, they're not going to be overly racial. They're not for white people. They're just against the modern world. I guess they want to go back in time. I think some of it is a kind of Luddite type of philosophy, being completely against technology. Now, I understand the destructive aspects of technology and how it has weakened us and actually enslaved us rather than freeing us. Part of that really has to do with the application of the technology, the media that's flowing through it. But even just think about a shovel. It is manly to go out there with a shovel, a hammer. But these are tools. This is technology. We are a technical people. And that is what has made us very, very strong, in the past at least. All of this technology, of course, has been used against us. The airplanes and boats and trains and whatnot are all, and cars and buses are all being used to flood our countries with non-whites who never could have invented anything of the sort to even get to our lands in the first place. And it's our wealth that's being used to get them here as well and to entice them, or literally to go and fly and pick them up and bring them to the country. That's what's going on now. Hashtag thanks Jews. I'm going to go to this song now. It's called Eurovision by Laibach. Please call in, folks, in the second hour, 347-633-9657.
falling apart.
Welcome back to the Solar Storm. This is hour two. I see some regulars in the chat. Got Blau Ocean. Got Luther in there. Got Oakley 88. Got a new one, Bernard. Came in all aggressive, accusing me of being a shill or something. Sticking it around. Fascist Lemmings there. Sean Surplus, who is doing his show over at TCTAUnleashed.com. Thanks to Sean for helping to promote Renegade Broadcasting. You can catch his show sporadically throughout the weeks. And it's usually on right after the Renegade show at 10 p.m. Eastern. So do check that out. Again, thanks to Sean for the promotion. And he's in the 24/7 stream as well on the site. So, Sean, you actually going on tonight? People can check you out. Let me know in the chat, and I'll tell people to go on over there. Let's see. If anybody is online and would like to talk to me via Skype, you can get connected to the conversation via renegade.broadcasting on Skype. Jay in L.A., yes, I am doing a show tonight. Call in. All right, there is a lot going on, of course, out there in the world at large, within our circles. Sean was actually talking about some of this dirty stuff that was brought up about a guy at an aggregator site. A site that carries my show. And I don't know if this information that was brought up about the guy is completely accurate, if maybe it was not photoshopped. Oh, but it's some sick stuff. Kind of BDSM stuff. Oh, I never liked the guy to begin with. He was probably one of my least favorite admins over there. But this just... this just confirms all the suspicions I had. As you can tell, I'm not getting too specific with the names, but anybody who's paying attention or is in danger of falling into any of these camps like the neo-reactionaries and gay man's clubs and everything, and the kosher conservatives and whatnot, you'll know what I'm talking about. who I'm talking about. Just some very, very weird people, very weird goings on around this type of information, of course. Should expect nothing less. There are some really good people, too. Some really good people. And I'm proud that a number of those good people have congregated at Renegade Broadcasting over the years. Yeah, Oakley saying in the chat, it rhymes with poon. Here's a hint, it rhymes with poon. Oh, crap, I didn't even start the stream on the site. Somebody, I guess I wasn't checking the chat enough, but I will switch that over right now. If you are just hearing the show on the stream, I apologize. You can check out the first hour over at blogtalkradio.com/renegadebroadcasting. Yes, I am live. I have been live for an hour, but because I'm having to fiddle around with so many different things to get this set up the way I want to, sometimes I forget to switch over the 24/7 stream, the auto DJ, to the live stream when I'm doing my own show. But here I am, going it alone. I thought I was going to have a guest, so I didn't prepare really any content. But yet here I am, smacking my gums. I think, folks, sometimes when we get caught up in movement drama, when we get caught up in all of the negative news, the chimp outs, and all the rest, too much, when we are completely demoralized because we're only tuning into our enemy's propaganda and analyzing the machinations of our enemies, we forget what kind of power we have. We become way too reactionary and we're not focused so much on pushing forward our agenda about improving ourselves and our people, about really doing what it takes to transform oneself. I think sometimes we feel like we have gotten to a certain level of enlightenment or have awakened to enough things that we don't need to continue striving to be better and better, to know more and more. I'm a bit guilty of this myself sometimes, but I'm always willing to entertain new notions, to look at things from a different perspective. And I have gotten into some weird areas, partially thanks to that aggregator site I was talking about before, such as, excuse me, such as the Flat Earth. Have you guys heard about the Flat Earth? No, not the Flat Earth Society or the religious dictates of the church for many years to insist that the world is actually flat. No, I'm talking about the present day movement to convince people that the world is our world, our Earth is not actually a sphere, but really pretty much a flat plane. Some of the videos that are out there about this topic present some very interesting points. Some, not all of them are well done, but this went from being just a tiny blip on the radar to being pretty huge now. There are a number of people who I know and are reasonably intelligent who are fairly convinced that there could be something to this. I wouldn't put it past our enemies to lie about something like that. It seems like the Earth actually is a sphere to me. I would tend more towards thinking that the hollow Earth is a reality rather than the flat Earth. But there's definitely more land than we're led to believe. There's more space than they want us to know about. These people want to own everything, and they want to keep us all penned in. They don't want us going down to look around Antarctica. That's for sure. Whether or not so that's to protect the Hollow Earth or possibly even more land. I don't know. But in any event, I've entertained these ideas. I don't stick so rigidly, so dogmatically to one point of view without at least considering whether or not that could be correct. We just take these scientists' word for everything. Well, scientists said so. You know what the Germans did with so-called science? They threw it out the window and they created amazing technologies in no time. Stop listening to Jewish science. To academia. These are the same academics, we're talking about science, that are pushing all sorts of crazy notions like race not existing. A lot of these so-called academics in the world today are completely anti-white, specifically. A lot of people worship this Neil Tyson deGrasse guy. He is the magical Negro of science. Oh, he's just brilliant. Brilliant. Or Michio Kaku. Michio Kaku. If there's ever been a shill for the New World Order, that guy's it. And I mean the New World Order as in the scheme of the Jews and the Jew World Order. Just look up the headline about the New World Order being promised to Jews from, what is it, about 75, 80 years ago, something like that. New World Order promised to Jews. You see all these headlines and the speeches, of course, about the New World Order coming to fruition. Yeah. Huh. Wonder what that's all about. Why are so many, you know, Jewish neocons involved? Or Jewish liberals? Why is that the case? Yeah. It's the Germanic death cults, of course. The Germanic death cults are causing this all. I've got a few callers on the line, but nobody has pressed one yet. So please, if you want to talk, press one. And if I don't see you pressing one, and okay, there we go. He pressed one. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Who is this?
Hello?
Yes, you are on the air.
Hello?
Who am I speaking with?
Oh, you're speaking to the black guy.
A black guy. I'm going to put you into the studio, so I got the number here. Yes, a black guy. Welcome to the show. What do you have to say?
An authentic, 100% African-American, no less. Yeah.
A 100%? Are you sure about them? A lot of African Americans are at least part white. Many of them have Irish blood.
No,
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if you know about this.
No.
Just hear me out for a second. I'm not sure if you know about this, but there was actually a breeding program to make more valuable slaves by mating Irish women who were slaves with black men. This is all well documented, and it accounts for. But you know why? It's actually to make the white slaves, or they would then be half white slaves, more valuable. Back in the days of slavery in the United States, white slaves were less valuable than black slaves. I don't know if you know about that.
Well, I'm not going to get into the details of it, but I sort of specialize in historical research. But
do look into it, though, please.
I don't doubt it. I just, you know, it's just not something I specifically know about. I listen to your show a lot. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm glad to have you listen to the show. I'd like to hear more about that, more your thoughts on it. I want to ask you about whether or not you know who brought the slaves to America in the first place. And I don't mean to.
I don't mean to say that your whole identity is tied
up with slavery. But unfortunately, in our world today, it seems like that is one of the main talking points about black identity, which I think is very destructive for black people because it keeps them in eternal victimhood state.
Well, that's all part and parcel of the overall plan. You and I both are intelligent enough to know that there are agendas, secret agendas at work, that everything isn't necessarily what it appears to be. But I have called them because I do listen to Renegade because I find it interesting to listen to a white nationalist perspective, mainly because I just find it fascinating. I went to integrated high school, so I sort of have some, I guess you'd say, some familiarity with some of white, conservative, nationalist ideologies and whatnot. And surprisingly, I hope this doesn't come as a surprise to you, but I'm actually sympathetic towards it. Actually, I believe that white people should have their own, European Americans should have their own territory. You'd be surprised how many black people actually don't really want to be with white. And I think it's interesting how that perspective never seems to come across in your regular discourse. It seems to be this presumption that all African Americans want to be with white people. That's really not true at all.
Well, I'll tell you why that is. I think is because Martin Luther King.
I know why it is because.
Well, let me give my theory. Let me give my theory real quickly. Martin Luther King's dream, which has been pushed so much, was little black children, little white children holding hands and all singing "Kumbaya" and all that. And also the leaders like Marcus Garvey were killed.
Uh-huh.
And he was advocating an Afrocentric point of view.
Can I say something?
Please.
Can I say something? It may come as a shock to you, but everyone didn't agree. All black people didn't agree with Martin Luther King's integrationist movement. In fact, I would actually argue that a good chunk of African Americans are actually nationalistic, and that what happened was because I'm actually sort of delved into alternative history because I think the mainstream, since I sort of specialize in historical research, I've oftentimes found it fascinating how something, our leadership was basically co-opted generations ago for other agendas. And I think you and I know that some of the forces that co-opted black leadership and made them leaders, okay, NAACP wasn't started by African Americans, nor were the Urban League. You know where I'm going with this.
Right,
that
yes.
Said, they were co-opted to basically back an agenda that didn't necessarily reflect the prevailing political, socio-political sentiments of the African-American community. Having said that, I do think it's interesting how you seem to sort of, I don't know, maybe if you genuinely believe this, but it's not true. Most African-Americans really do not want to be with European-Americans at all. And what happened is, I just think it's interesting how that sort of doesn't seem to come across, because I've actually listened to some of the people who do call into your show. And for some bizarre reason, they seem to be under this delusion that somehow African Americans, most black people, want to be white. We actually don't. What happens is that our leadership is not really our leadership, much like European Americans. They don't really reflect you guys at all. They've all sold out. So why would you think that any of the prominent black people who get displayed in the mainstream media really do reflect the true sentiments of black people? They don't.
That's a good point.
They represent an agenda that is not necessarily genuinely from black people. So I think that what you white nationalists need to understand is the people that you see on these public affairs shows do not necessarily reflect black people at all, at all. And I think that needs to be stressed because it seems to be this mentality that black people want to be with white. I don't. Not at all. And I'm graduate degree educated a couple of times over, but the point I'm trying to get at, we don't necessarily want to be with you, so get over yourself.
Now, who would you want to be with? Would you want to be with
I'm not gonna get into the details of that because quite frankly, I'm just letting you know that the notion that somehow all black people want to be with white is really offensive to a lot of black people.
What I'm trying to get at is, would you rather be around people who are well educated? Like, hold on, I need to ask the question.
Do you think that Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton represents most black people?
No, and I hope they know that. I hope most black people know that.
Thank you. They don't represent us at all. Listen to me. I'm listening to you. I'm just trying to let me get a word in edgewise. They represent an agenda. Okay, period. They don't represent black people.
Okay,
so
but
please stop operating on this function that somehow Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton represent black people.
I know that they don't.
Stop using them as if they're our leaders. They're really not our leaders. They're really puppets, okay? And we both know who are pulling the string.
Well, I'd like to see more black people standing up to them. And I'd like to see, of course, more white people standing up to white leaders. But what I was going to ask is...
You and I both know that's a very precarious thing to do. The fact of the matter is that anytime any true black leadership, or for that matter, true white leadership, for instance, Ron Paul, I actually do believe for the most part, I personally think he was co-opted earlier on, but he deluded people into thinking that he actually did have some type of independence. He really doesn't. Most mainstream white, black politicians don't have any true independence. They're all co-opted.
A steam valve.
But he deluded enough people to make people believe that he had independence. But these people do not represent white people. Why would you think that these mainstream black politicians or even these so-called civil rights advocates represent black people?
I've got a question for you. Come on, you gotta let me interact with you a little bit here. The black people out there that you know, do they reject the people on MSNBC for their ideology? And not only that, being just barely black, like Melissa Harris Perry, her whole identity is tied up in being this proud African goddess and whatnot. But look how fair skinned she is. You don't actually see a whole lot of really black people on TV.
Can I say something? I'm not going to get into Melissa Harris Perry. I don't even watch television like that. I'm familiar with her. Having said that, I think it's common knowledge that most African Americans have some admixture or some degree. Me personally, I'm personally aware of some Native American in my distant lineage, but that's neither here nor there. The fact is, we do have a commonality in the sense that we're all descendants, part and parcel of the African slaves. So that is a bond that we all unite around. So my blackness, I mean, I'm a brown-skinned dude. I'm not the darkest black person. And you know, so I know that there are other things going on in my family, but that's irrelevant to me because my whole political identity as a person and who I belong to is completely African. I may actually have some Native American in my family, and there's some indicators that there are some Native American admixtures. I'm not aware of any European admixtures, thank goodness. But that being said,
don't want the devil in you.
Proud of
No, so,
well, look, here's the deal. I'm not one of these black people that basically gets an education as far as European American. I understand very much so that the African American and European American experiences are completely different. And I do not pretend like they're the same because they're not. And I think that's part of the problem is that basically black leadership has been co-opted for an agenda that doesn't necessarily reflect how black people truly think. And so we're caught up in this sort of like, well, really, black people, you and I both know, you sound like a pretty intelligent guy, okay? You do, despite some of the things you say. You do sound intelligent. You know very well that this is a much larger game that's being played. This is a big game.
And oh, it's a huge game.
It's a huge game, okay? So let's just be real. The people that supposedly represent black people who are put in the mainstream media do not necessarily reflect black people at all. Black people are merely being used as pawns, okay? You and I both know that.
No.
Most of the black leadership has basically been co-opted and basically been compromised to some degree or another, so they don't really reflect how black people really think.
Well, can you give me an analysis of what's been going on with the incitement towards rioting and all the rest and how the media is actually seemingly encouraging this?
I don't want to be with you. Listen to me. I'm trying to tell you. Will you listen? Okay.
So, do you think all black police force for black areas would be the solution?
No. Listen to what I'm trying to say. There's frustration because what's really going on, and it really doesn't necessarily get reflected in the public discourse, is that most African Americans absolutely do not want to be the European Americans. We're done. We've been done for a long time. But what happens is that voice gets basically drowned out by these people who've been co-opted and preach all this multiculturalism and gobbledygook. It's garbage. Most black people don't really want to be white at all. So there's frustration and there's anger because the leadership is basically does not really represent black people. It represents an agenda that's completely alien to what black people really think. I love my people. I absolutely love my people. I don't want to be European Americans at all. I think you guys have done, and I don't hate you. I really don't. I personally think that we are sort of stuck together through a tragic scenario of circumstances that really we have no control over. It's tragic.
We're so different in every way. It seems.
I don't think that we're different. I'll say our historical and cultural experiences are different. I do believe in race. I do believe that there are differences
okay.
in race.
That's
and
good.
I'm not a cultural Marxist. I know what that means, right? The point I'm trying to get at is that I'm simply saying is this. We've been shoved together through a tragic scenario of historical circumstance. Okay?
I agree
we
completely.
We don't like each other. We have totally different perspectives. Europeans, Africans have totally different perspectives. It's almost like Native Americans. Native Americans have completely historical and cultural experience. Why would you think that black people would have the same think just like European Americans? We don't. And most of your historical figures that you revere and you love, we hate. I absolutely hate most of the founding fathers. I think they're disgusting men, and I'm actually offended that I have to carry around currency with their faces in my pocket. Most black people believe that. You have feel that, but you never see that reflected in mainstream media. There's sort of like this assimilation, this multiculturalist black person that gets put on a TV or on a radio. But the fact of the matter is, most black people love their people and would really do not desire to necessarily identify with European Americans at all.
You know,
Having said that, you people are historically having. Let me make my point.
You've been making a lot of points. You got to let me get some words in here too.
You go on every week, hours and hours. Making
it is my show. Do you have a show?
I understand how you think, but let me finish making my point.
Okay, please. Go ahead.
I'm simply trying to say. That when you make this, when you forge this argument or this inference that somehow African Americans want to be with European Americans, that really pisses a lot of black people off because that's really not true. I don't want to be with you all, and I think I wish you the best. And I think that we're stuck together through a tragic scenario of circumstances. Well, there are forces behind the curtain that are keeping us together, and you and I both know what's going on.
Well, yeah. I think we need it's more like separation.
I don't want my children to marry you. I want my kids to be black. I want my people to be beautiful and black. And, I don't want to be with you. Please.
Good. We can really agree on so much here.
I think black people should have
currency with black figures on it. I don't think we all need to be under the same system. I think black people should have their thing. White people should have their thing.
You don't think I actually want that?
You think that I
want
to have?
I can't speak for you personally. Let me make my point. I can't speak for you personally. I can't read your mind, but I'm merely judging the history of Europeans. Europeans are imperialistic. Okay, historically speaking, you don't leave anyone alone. Let me make my point. With Native Americans, you signed a lot of treaties that you respect their territory. You allowed
them I didn't.
To live their own way. Whatever.
The government did.
The U.S. government violated every treaty they have with Native Americans. You honestly believe if you didn't leave the indigenous people of the Americas alone, and you wouldn't leave them alone, do you really think that we're dumb enough to believe you'll leave us alone? We don't trust you, and we have very good reason not to trust you. So this notion that somehow you just want to be left alone so you can have your perfect little white society, whatever, we're not stupid. All you have to do is refer to history. Look at history. You don't leave anyone alone. So seriously, we're sort of trapped with you. And this notion that somehow we want to be around European Americans because we love them so much. Are you really delusional enough to believe that?
What about all the mestizos? What about
being oppressed by your people?
What about the Hispanics? Do you see that there is a resentment from the black community about the country being absolutely inundated?
Let me make my point. I don't believe in multiculturalism. I think it's a scam. We all know who it was.
You're kind of evading the questions, though. I'm asking specifically about the mestizo incited invasion, the incentivized invasion that is currently taking place. This is taking away a lot of jobs from the lower economic status, and that's
it's
black
horrible.
People are getting ruined
but
by
see,
this.
But it's a little bit. It's a bigger game than that because reality of the matter is those people. Let's just be frank about it. They don't have the political power to do a lot of the things that they're doing. Obama is merely going. He's merely enacting someone else's agenda by him trying to legalize these people. That's not something. He's not caving into Hispanic political power. We both know that he's not doing it. He's really doing that. So this is not something that I necessarily blame on Hispanics. For instance, European Americans get so angry and frustrated that all these Mexicans are coming into America, but it's a larger game than that. Because these people are coming into these people from Central Central America and Mexico. They're coming into America because their economies have, for the most part, been devastated. Who has done that? These international bankers.
Yes.
These people who basically come into these nations and rob and rape and pillage and divest these countries of their manufacturing, their labor. They undermine all of these facets of these people's societies, where they're making these places literally unlivable, especially including their environmental pollution that they cause by basically brazenly, you know, having these totally like evil manufacturing facilities. Okay. So these people are coming here for a reason. They are not coming here to be discriminated against because they want to be discriminated against. They're coming here because their countries have been racked and pillaged and raped. Okay, so it's a much larger picture. Oh, you can't.
I get that, but
It's easy for me or you
black
to
guy.
Sit back and say, okay, well, why are these people coming into this country? They're taking low-wage, low-skilled jobs.
Black guy. You only have to say it once. I get it. I just wish more people were able to get that bigger picture perspective. What's unfortunately happening is that the media has gotten a lot of people together, a big coalition of oppressed minorities and fringe groups, whether it's LGBTQ, whether it's women, anybody that they can get that is on the margins of society or is put in a victimhood position, they're getting them together to try to team up on the white man and blame the white man.
But don't you think that,
for everything?
You're smart enough. You know that's by design. You know that's
of
by
course.
Design. You're smart enough.
But it doesn't change the fact that it's
you're
happening.
Smart okay, but the point I'm trying to get at is that most people, the layperson, doesn't understand the big picture like someone like you or I. We both know that this is a part of a much larger scheme. The goal is to control. You and I both know the goal is to ultimately forge an anti-white political coalition, okay, against,
yes.
Comprised mainly of blacks, Hispanics, Jews, sexual minorities, whatever, okay? The goal is basically to have a sort of like a politically gridlocked political system. So basically, the masses of people, or just the majority of people, which are European Americans, are not necessarily their sentiments aren't reflected in the public policy or whatever. Okay,
right.
We both know that. That's how this democratic system has been undermined and co-opted. I understand it.
I've got another caller here. I'm going to put you on hold if you want to stay on the line. I'm not sure if this caller is looking to respond to anything you've said, but stay on the line. I will come back to you. Sound good?
Well, I can stay on a little bit longer. I'll try to stay online.
Okay.
All right, cool.
All right. Jeb, welcome to the show.
Hey, Kyle. What's going on?
Oh,
I would like to.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. I apologize.
Oh, well.
Well, I would like to respond to this fellow. He said that most black people do not want to be around white people, and I would have to say that historically, at least in recent history, that is just simply not true. It's exemplified by the fact that black people, for the most part, when they get a little bit of money, they move into white neighborhoods, and that can be exemplified through NBA and NFL players who, as soon as they become millionaires, they move out of black areas and move into white areas, and most of them try to get them a white wife. You know, I just don't understand where he's going by saying that most black people do not want anything to do with white people. I believe that it would be more truthful for him to say that most black people have a deep-seated hatred for white people, and that would be more truthful. Mm-hmm. But to say that they don't want to be around white people at all, that's just fallacious.
I think they want white money too, if possible. And playing the victim does get them that white money as well. So another point that could be made here is that I don't go around calling into black shows. I'm not trying to colonize black shows, but we do have a number of black callers who like to call into renegade shows. So just bringing up that point, Jeb, do you want me to bring it back on the air and maybe you guys can try to hash this out without talking over each other?
Well, yeah, if he would allow me to, it seems as he has a problem with that. But, you can bring him on. I'll listen to him.
All right, we'll try to get a word in edgewise while he's on the air, but we'll see how that goes. Black Eye.
Hello.
Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, hey, what's up, man?
Response. Do you have any response to what Jeb was bringing up there?
or myself? Well, I mean, I'm offended you to think that, well, first of all, I'm black. You're not black. I will never pretend to speak for white people at all, but for some bizarre reason, you think you could somehow understand how black people think. Having said that, I think you hit it more in the head, the nail on the head, when you said that black people want white money. That's true. I'll give you that. We don't necessarily want to be white people. We like money. We like fine things like any other person, a group of people would. It just so happens that these nicer things seem to be within proximity with European Americans. It doesn't necessarily mean we want to be with white people. Having said that, I think that you seem to be under this delusion that somehow every black person wants to have a white mate. That's really not true at all. You just look at the statistically speaking, even black people who are of a higher socioeconomic bracket overwhelmingly prefer to marry a black person. So that's not true. Most black women don't want to marry white women. Most black women don't want to marry white men, and most black men don't want to marry white women. I think the media, for reasons that we both probably do understand, tends to focus on black people that do interracially marry and have interracial relationships for an obvious subversive agenda. But the notion that somehow black people want to marry white people, really, that really feeds in, I think, to a lot of white male sexual insecurity. But the reality of the matter is that most black men don't want to marry white women. That's just a very small segment of black men. And the quiet is kept. A lot of black men who do that because they know that they will advance themselves professionally. So that's why they tend to do that, because, quite frankly, it's sort of appealing in certain industries like entertainment or even sports to have a white spouse. It doesn't necessarily mean that they prefer it, but it gives them sort of crossover appeal. So don't delude yourself. That's really not true at all.
How in the world could that give them crossover appeal when it actually engenders amongst most white people that I know an animosity to see an outsider with one of our women? I just don't see how that goes.
Here's the thing about it. Let me ask you this, and this is a question. Have you asked yourself why are these white women marrying these black men? Don't they bear some type of responsibility for it? I mean, really, these black men come along with a medallion and hypnotize these white women. They have a responsibility. They are betraying their people as well, because the fact of the matter is, yeah, exactly. Why do they find a black man more physically appealing than a white guy? Okay, that you have to ask yourself that, because they're obviously doing that. Now, just
well, I have a theory, and if you'd like to hear it, I can't speak for the higher socioeconomic classes, you know, because I'm not a millionaire or a billionaire. I'm not an NFL player or an NBA star. But amongst the low classes where I live and work and interact, it's drug use. 95% of it is drug use.
Okay,
that leads these white women into that.
Well, look, here's the thing. I do not pretend to know that, because reality is I can only know what I speak. And the fact of the matter is that I only know for a fact from the black community's perspective, because that's what I know. I don't know what white people think, okay? I'm not going to pretend like I do. But I will say this much, from the black perspective, you do have some black people, more so black men, that will marry a white woman because they feel like that will help or advance their professional careers. So, but the point I'm trying to
Let's be honest. Let's be honest now. There's a significant portion of those black men that mate with white women strictly as throwing mud in the eye of white men. That, I mean, it's not to advance any socioeconomic status. It's to say fuck you to the white man. That way they can play them up and down the street.
Can I say something about that? Okay, let me say something about that. I think that you may be, quite frankly, I think that you may be overthinking that. I don't think that most black men who do interracially date think that much about it. They really just, a lot of them are sort of like falling under this illusion of multiculturalism or multiracialism. It's not like they say, I'm going to piss off white guys. I'm going to find some white whore so I can, walk around or whatever. No, they don't think that way at all. They really just don't give it too much thought. And to be perfectly blunt with you, I'm a black man, and I'm fairly, I guess you could say, average attractive or whatever. I don't even look for white women. I can honestly tell you that a lot of times when I'm around white women, all they see, and I can see in their eyes, is a big black dick. And that's real. And I'm not even trying to give that off. So I think there's a certain level of over-sexualization of the black male. I think that we've sort of been sort of like portrayed as these oversexed black penises that just want to rape the nearest white vagina we can find, which is really the furthest thing from the truth for most black men. You got a lot of black men that really can't stand white people, white women included. You got a lot of black men who are gay. You have a lot of black men who, quite frankly, just don't really think about it. It doesn't even enter their mind to even be with a white woman. So I think you're overstating that. And I think that sort of comes to me. I think it comes from your own insecurity as a white man that for some reason you think your pale pink penis is somehow inferior to a black one. And I'm not trying to.
Do you live in a racially mixed area? Because I do. I actually live in an area that's minority white. And I went to jails that were minority white. And I've worked in abortion spaces that were minority white. And I've heard these conversations when these people didn't even know that white people were around. And I've heard these statements made on too many occasions to think that it's just a one-off situation.
Do you just talk
amongst your own circle, or do you actually get out and mingle? Because I attempt to mingle.
Okay, well, can I say something? Okay, I do not pretend to know how all people think. Of course, you're only speaking from your experience, okay, and from your socioeconomic perspective. So am I.
Well, you just don't hate that I have an inferiority complex about my white penis. But you're not pretending to speak for me.
You sound like you do, because if you think that black men
I'm not trying to get to a pissing contest, me, yet I don't have my tape measure in my hand. But yet you brought up the size of people's penis.
Who has the inferiority
complex?
I didn't bring up the size of your penis. If you want to get technical, I didn't bring up the size of your penis, okay? So let's not go there. But having said that, my point is that, no, black men do not get up every morning saying, hey, I want to marry some white woman. Not at all. The media really does co-opt a lot of these black guys and really does, I think, cast an disproportionate spotlight on black men and women who interracially marry. So it does probably come across to most European Americans that black people want to marry them, which is not true at all.
Well, I'm not saying that they want to marry him. I just say they want to dick him down.
Can we move off the subject of interracial marriages or whatever for a moment? Because I also want to address another issue that that seems to come up frequently on your show.
Go right ahead.
What would you like to speak about?
Okay, because I can't be on the phone too much longer. I think that I actually think that it shouldn't be it can't be overstated that we're not your enemy. Black people are not your enemy. The reality is that we're stuck together. If we don't like it, you don't like it. So quit trying to make it seem like we're like this sort of like us versus them type of thing. It's not like black people want to be with you. We're just as helpless and under the thumb of the system just as much as you. It's not like black people have some like disproportionate power or whatever, and we're controlling things behind the scenes. Not at all. Black people don't necessarily want to be with white people, so why do you keep trying to portray it like we're doing this and we're doing that? Not really. It's a very small clique of black people who have that access to the people who have real power in this country. Most black people really don't want to be with whites at all. And it's just amazing to me how you just have this running perception on every show that blacks want to be white. They want to be. No, we don't.
Because of reality, in the city where I live in, Birmingham, I've watched neighborhood after neighborhood turn majority black because as the whites move out, the blacks chase them. And it might be because it's facilitated through Section 8 housing or through whatever else.
But the blacks literally chase them. I agree with that.
Let me finish my point. Yeah. And in greater, in the United States as a whole, you would have to admit that for the past 60 years, the construction industry in America has been driven by the fact that black people will chase white people out of areas, and white people will have to build more shit in the damn wilderness.
Well, look, here's the thing. That's because segregation is natural. We really shouldn't be with you. I agree with that. But having said that, there's no other. Look, you and I both know that who funds these Section 8 vouchers? Who has the political power to actually deliberately, and I do believe it's part of a larger plan, deliberately import these Somalians and these Nigerians into these historically all-white neighborhoods. Do you really think that black people do that? No. We both know who does that. It's not black people. We're not doing that, but I do believe it's deliberate. But having said that, it is part of a larger agenda. I will give you that, but do not attribute that to black people. It's not us doing this. We are merely being used, and I do understand what's going on. But please, let's understand whose role is playing what. Black people are not implementing this larger agenda. We're being used as pawns, and I understand what's going on. But it's not black people wanting to get Section 8 vouchers to live around whites. They merely take the Section 8 vouchers because it's offered to them, and they basically go where the money is or whatever. It's not because, it's not that they want to be around these people. They're giving these vouchers. The problem when it comes to stuff like that is that you're talking about a much larger problem, the historical legacy of impoverishment and economic disenfranchisement within the African-American community. It makes us very vulnerable and susceptible to outside influences, individually as well as collectively. So you have a lot of black people are basically being used as sort of like as pawns. Okay, let's put these blacks over here or here so we can break up this white area or whatever. That's deliberately done. I do believe that. But it's not because black people are doing it or because we planned it. We're being used and exploited to that extent. So let's understand. Okay.
Yeah. All right, I understand that, and I agree with that.
Because, look, here's the deal, dude. We don't have the political, economical, organizational power to really do that. You know that we don't, but you know who does. So stop trying to attribute that to us. The black people that you see who are being moved into these Section 8 housing places, they do not have any type of political awareness of that. They're lay people. They're regular average people. They don't think about these broad things. They go to work or they do what they have to do to make ends meet. They're not thinking they're part of a larger agenda to make America more racially mixed or whatever. They're not thinking that. That's something that's way beyond most people's thinking, black or white. They understand that they're merely being used to basically create a very fractured and atomized society, and I believe that is definitely the agenda. But it's not because they want to do that. They're merely being used. So your anger is misplaced.
No, I'm not angry at black people. As a matter of fact,
you should be angry because here's the thing.
Now, you're telling me not to be angry at black people, and I'm saying I'm not, and you say I should be. Now,
listen to what I'm saying. I'm saying you should not be mad at black people. You should be angry, but you should not be mad at black people because the average black person who you see on the street, who's basically in these Section 8 housings or whatever, or on EDT or whatever, because the economy is crap. Okay, it's not because they're doing that by design. They're merely being used. Much like they don't have that type of political power.
Okay, I agree with you, but what are they being used to do? What are they? They are being used to destroy my people. Because you like us or we like you, if we live in close proximity long enough, we will blend. That's the nature of things. But they don't blend you out. They blend me out.
Mm-hmm. I think we're being used. I think that if you think about it, you'd understand that. I understand. I'm not trying to tell you that you shouldn't be angry. I'm angry too because I feel like, quite frankly, I love my people, and I really do feel like we're basically victims. We're victims of tragic events that happened in a long distant history that we're still dealing with this. Okay, I personally believe that European Americans and African Americans really have historical grievances and antagonism that really make any type of cohabitation really just not likely, at least not peacefully anyways, because there is this European supremacist mentality that was part of the ideological underpinnings that made this country. I will grant you this much. When the Europeans came over here, it was primarily, you know, this society, this country, when you guys took it from the Native Americans, you created your own little society that was like this sort of like perfected democratic Europe. I get it. Granted, it wasn't necessarily egalitarian or it was very aristocratic in nature. Because if you look at the founding fathers, you don't really give a damn about the average poor white person. But the point I'm trying to get at, it really wasn't meant to be a multiracial society. So society over the generations has been co-opted and infiltrated by outside forces and is being made and molded into something that was never really meant to be. I will give you that.
Well, I believe you have a greater you have a greater understanding of the history of the founding of this country than most
of Of course I do, because I'm no bullshit. I'm an intellectual. I'm all about facts. I'm not about emotionalism. I understand what's going on. But having said that, okay, black people are basically being used. I see what's going on. I understand what the black elites have done and who they've been co-opted by. But do not get mad at black people. We are merely being used. We're just as helpless. The average black person is just as helpless as the white people are. Because I personally think our histories are very different. Think about it like this. Native Americans have a completely different history than European Americans, and they have their own separate societies, their own little independent so-called Indian nations or whatever. Does it make sense that African Americans should be in school with European Americans? Our histories are very different, okay, equally as different, probably even more so than Europeans and Native Americans. So I think that's a completely incompatible type of relationship. It's an unnatural association.
Different biology. Different psychology and biology. There's not a one-size-fits-all.
Here's the thing. I will acknowledge that there are biological differences, okay? But the point I'm not into this pissing game about who's better doing this or that. Whatever. The fact of the matter is I've met some dumbass white people and I've met some smart, brilliant black people. So,
I'm talking about intelligences, you know, the different kinds of intelligence that, you know, when you're trying to teach a Western white education to a black child, sometimes it's just very incompatible. And so that black child is frustrated because he's not able to thrive because he's not being taught to his strengths. He's not being taught about something that really jives with him.
Well, can I say this? I'm not going to go ahead and agree with that because I think there's an undercurrent of sort of like this implication that somehow black people are less rational, we're more prone to emotionalism, blah, blah, blah. The fact of the matter is that I do believe that there are biological differences, okay? I'll just leave it at that. But having said that, I'm not going to go into parsing up what those differences are. I think we all have an idea what they are, but having said that, that's irrelevant to me. The fact of the matter is I'm all about people exercising sovereignty and actually the true political sentiments of the people, black, white, whatever, being reflected. And that's not reflected here because we really don't like each other. And
so
I think it's wrong for us to really – I mean, we don't.
When are black people going to say that they want to just be separate, that they want completely their own towns with their own police?
You have black people – you have black people saying that everywhere, but you know that
what happens when that black utopia is realized, whether it's Detroit or St. Louis Ferguson? Businesses all move out.
I don't know if you're trying to be sarcastic with the black utopia, white utopia, but whatever. Look, the point I'm trying to get at, that's irrelevant. Because the fact of the matter is that blacks, whites, I personally think that we really shouldn't be together. That's my personal belief. I'm not going to say that, that we could make some utopia or whatever like that. That's ridiculous. I don't think that Africans should be in Europe. I think that's ridiculous. I don't think Europeans should be in Africa. That's crazy. Why are they there? It doesn't make sense. I mean, I agree with that. I think that Africans, Muslims, whatever, they shouldn't be in Europe. Why are they there? I agree. I'm white nationalist, actually. I believe that white people should have their own white nation. And I think most black people believe that. So get off this notion that somehow black people are trying to be with whites. We really aren't. We're being used, okay?
Okay, well, you've gotten that point across tonight. I thank you for the call. It has been an interesting conversation.
Bye.
Take care, black guy. All right, Jeb, you have anything else you'd like to add? We got another caller here.
No, I just have to say I agree with him. And if black people don't want to be around white people, more power to them, because I certainly don't want to be around them.
Yeah, I think if we could all agree on that, hey, we don't like each other. We don't work well together. It's not good for either of us. Let's just go our separate ways. I think that'd be the solution to a lot of these problems.
That's a wonderful first step.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful first step. That's right.
Thanks for the call, Jeb. I appreciate the conversation.
Yes, sir.
Even if most of it was with our caller, I thought it was a good one.
Yes, sir.
Take care. All right. Hello, caller, you're on there. Who is this?
Hello?
Yes, it's you. You're on the air. Who is this?
It's Mike in Tampa Bay over here in Florida.
Okay, any thoughts on the show tonight?
Well, good job as usual. I mean, you spent a lot of time with the underprivileged, but what can I say?
It's affirmative action radio time, actually. I'm required to give a certain section of my airtime now to underrepresented minorities.
It's funny how, like, you know, the educated black man has always got so much to say about, you know, European imperialism, but we're actually the most diverse race, culture, whatever. We happen to be the most diverse there is.
And the thing is that although there are sometimes conflicts between white people, and they've flared up into huge wars, for the most part, because of the similarities, we're able to actually get along together pretty well, at least after a few generations. That is what the American experience seems to have been about, where, you know, these different ethnicities that have issues with each other, after some time, they actually do get together in this melting pot, whether it's they mate with each other, they just share different parts of their culture. They begin to really, you know, mesh pretty well together. And I think that's actually a pretty good thing. I'm not saying that we should destroy ethnicities, definitely not in Europe, but it is good to have an overarching white identity. Now, for black people, as the caller mentioned, a lot of that identity is formed through their common experience of slavery in the United States. For, you know, African Americans, that is their Africans in America. That is what really brings them together. For white people, unfortunately, what brings us together is not any of our accomplishments today, not any sense of pride, but only guilt. We're not allowed to identify as white unless we're being blamed for, you know, white privilege and being told to have white guilt. They don't want us to identify as white in any regard if it's about accomplishments. But when there is somebody to blame, somebody to punish with affirmative action, they know exactly what white is. So that brings us together as well, just the attack on white people in general. So I think that perhaps our victimhood here, I don't like playing the victim, but our victimhood could actually be what ends up bringing us together as a more cohesive people. It looks like that caller dropped, so if you'd like to call back in, please do. All right, hello, looks like an internet caller. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Marcus. I was just listening.
Okay, Marcus, no thoughts to share? Come on. Come on, I saw you in the chat.
Well, just the same old. Just, you know, you debate with a black guy, and you know, many of them are, you know, they know what the problem is. I mean, Chet, I guess it was Chet again. He's not. I mean, he knows a lot of things, but then, you know, the result. You just say, okay, well, then just let's separate. And, okay, we even pay you a reparation, $1 million per person.
It'd be worth it.
They won't do it.
It would be worth it.
Yeah.
You know, even $1 million, it seems pretty extreme.
You know, within 5 years, the money is blown, and then it's Haiti all over again.
Yeah, he'd argue differently, that it'd all be spent towards investment, but I'm thinking cocaine, hookers, and all sorts of things. That would actually be devastating for the African community to get that kind of money. I think it'd be devastating for white people, too. Not as devastating, though. But when you're suddenly presented with all, you know, a huge handout like that and you haven't earned it, you don't know what to do with it. But if it's happening in Liberia,
you know, whatever you present them, if you tell them, well, okay, then let's separate. It's always not really, you know, because then they have to live among themselves, and that's always Africa. You know, and, you know, people don't like it. You know, that's why Africans come to Europe. That's why African Americans don't want to really separate, but just get a better deal in white society. That, you know.
You know, part of this really is because of the world controllers just ruining Africa and other places. As he mentioned, you know, with NAFTA and GATT destroying the middle American economies. It happened in Africa, too, most recently with them bombing the hell out of Libya, overthrowing Gaddafi, and then taking all of these Libyans into Europe. So, you know, they obviously jump at the bait. They're incentivized to go there, and they don't have much hope for a decent life in Africa.
90 seconds.
So it really is a problem that is being very much exasperated by our leaders. It is not wholly of their own doing, these blacks who board the boats and everything. It's a tragedy for everyone. It really is. Marcus.
Yeah, of course it is. But but then on the other hand, yes?
Oh, go ahead.
60 seconds.
Yeah, just one more thing on the other. Japan, where both bars don't age, and within 10 years they were back, you know, and not there. So, I mean, being bombed is no excuse.
Well, that's a good point. Japan was nuked, and they rebounded very well. Even in those cities, rebuilt it incredibly. Germany, look what happened in Dresden. Look how Dresden became rebuilt, and all those other cities as well, very quickly. But look what happened in that same time period to Detroit. Detroit went from being a shining city with incredible wealth to being a black nightmare, black blight. So it definitely goes to show that a society is really created not by the flag it's flying, but by the people who are comprising it.
Yeah, and then Libya is not really a black country. It's there are Berbers and even some Italians mixed in there, and then you have Arabs, and then in the south there are black people, but the floods also, they just cross Libya and then or Algeria, and then they want to go to Europe from Central Africa. So it's, you know, just because Libya is in Africa, it doesn't mean they are like the stereotypical
right
Africans.
They're not sub-Saharan Africans, that's for sure. Hey, Marcus,
yeah.
Thanks for the call. It's good to hear you on the line. Call into our shows when you get a chance.
I just want to listen.
Okay, take care. All right, let's see who else might want to get on the air here. I'm just going to go through these callers. Probably just calling in to listen, but hell, I'll just put them on the spot anyway. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, Kyle. What's up? It's Robert.
Hi, Robert. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, good to hear from you, man. It's an interesting conversation that you were having with that guy. You know, I think he's being disingenuous completely. And, you know, he thinks he's smart. He thinks he's intellectual. But obviously he's totally disconnected from the reality on the ground. I live here in St. Louis. And that's not the reality that I see on the ground. And yeah, I'm not black, but so what? I live around a lot of black people, and guess what? As soon as they can get enough money, they move away from their own. You know, I worked with a black chick, right, at my last job, and she's like, this was in an urban area she was living in. She's like, you know, she's like, oh, I gotta get away from there over there, and it was in a pretty rough neighborhood. And I was like, what's the matter? You don't like where you live? And she's like, no, too many niggas around. that was what she said. So don't give me this crap about how you blacks want to stay around your own people, because you're suicidal if you do. If I wanted to move in one of your neighborhoods, guess what? My safety is immediately in danger and your safety is immediately endangered. The most dangerous person to a black woman is, guess what? A black man. So don't give me that crap that you guys just love each other and you want to live around each other. No, you hate each other. You hate everything that you see, pretty much, especially in the hood. And I'm not talking about decent, normal black people. I'm talking about the hood rats. And, you know, I was looking at this book, and it's by a black guy, and it's called The Uncivil War, Blacks versus Niggers. Right. And it's written by a black guy. And I would suggest people look into that book, because he basically he says things that most white people don't have the cojones to talk about. And, you know, that's what it really is. The black libtard intellectuals, the Michael Eric Dysons and so forth, they don't have the gumption to confront. It's called The Uncivil War, Blacks versus Niggers, Confronting the Subculture Within the African-American Community. It's by a guy named Talib Starks. It's written by a black dude. And so this is what it really is. And guys like that just called in, he doesn't have the gumption to, you know, confront the problem in the hood. And you see, like, Kyle, you and I, we got the balls to talk about the sellouts and the white political structure, like Harry Reid and John Boehner and the rest of these punks, because guess what? I'm willing to call a white dude a traitor and a sellout and the rest of it. But see, blacks got this monolithic nature about them where they're unwilling in numerous instances to call out people that look like them, like the president, like Eric Holder, and the rest of it, because see, they got that monolith mentality to where they're going to be an Uncle Tom if they criticize one of their own. And see, that's a real problem, because see, the blacks, they've been under the Marxist Jew yoke since, before the civil rights movement. You know, Stalin and the guys talked about weaponizing the blacks against the United States, all the Jew commies over there in the Soviet Union. They talked about weaponizing the black population against the rest of the population in the United States, and they're under the Marxist mentality. And until they jettison the Marxist mentality, they're gonna, you know, in the United States, they're gonna keep, you know, suffering under this Zionist plantation.
You know, a lot of the Black Lives protesters are actually part of communist groups. They have communist websites being promoted on some of the signs at some of these Ferguson-type Black Lives Matter protests. And as you were saying, black lives are mainly taken by black people, yet they don't really seem to care about black lives unless it's taken by a non-black life, specifically a white life, a white person. So it's very hypocritical. And as you're saying, they won't criticize their own. They're not going to blame black people for all the black crime. It's all a system of white supremacy that's keeping them down, killing them.
Well, you know, what's fascinating, Kyle, is this dialectic. It's like you bitch about the cops wasting you out here on these streets, but look at the way you're acting out here on these streets. And so the cultural disintegration that's happened, and again, I realize that the hip-hop community was weaponized against you by the usual suspects. And you know, hey, there's been things weaponized against us. Some of the satanic metal and the Jewish influenced punk rock and the rest of it. And you know, I see that. I'm in my 40s now. I was a victim of this crap. But you know, and then people are coming off the plantation in the black population. But the thing is, it's just this monolithic. We must be on the left side of the political spectrum. And we're looking for the handout from Big Brother, the same Big Brother you bitch about every day, but yet you want money from him. And so, you know, it's that cognitive dissonance that they've got to fight. And we're under this thing too. Look at all the white guys. They're all Republicans. They're all Christian Zionist idiots that watch Fox News. It's the same thing. We're on the corporate fascist right plantation, and the black guys are all under the Zio Jew commie left plantation. But you know, Sheldon Adelson's running the Republican Party. They all got to go kiss his ring if they want the Republican nomination. So the Jews sitting there like, yeah, we got the white guys over here on the right. We got our little black weapons over here on the left, and we'll just throw them at each other. And that's how they do it, man. You know, it's sophisticated. So, they're good at it, but I, you know, you and I and other guys are figuring it out.
Let's talk about how we can apply this knowledge to our real life situations that we're facing now, which is black mob violence, rioting in many large cities, most recently, perhaps currently, in Baltimore. We know that they're being weaponized against us. Do we just do we confront it outright? Do we run away from it? Do we make appeals to the people that this type of behavior is wrong, you know, condemn it? And I mean, just talk about it. What do we do about this? It's very much a reality. We realize that they're pawns, but they're very much still dangerous pawns.
Yeah, well, I'm about to interview Colin Flaherty, author of White Girl Bleed a Lot and Don't Make the Black Kids Angry on my show.
I'm going to have to tune in.
50 minutes.
I'm going to have to tune in.
It's going to be over there on Republic Broadcasting. You can listen to it through your smartphone on the TuneIn app, all you guys listening. Well, yeah, I got him for the first hour, and then I'm going to have John Friend coming on after him, and him and I are going to deconstruct it. So it should be interesting. But here's the thing, you know, white people, you just got to say, hey, the political correct crap, and I know that people got to maintain jobs and the rest of this stuff. But at the same time, you know, look, I know a lot of black people. I have black friends. And guess what? When you get them alone, they want to throw the hood rat, the dumbed down, Bebe kid, Shaniqua, getting their five kids in the EBT card to Section 8 house. They hate them too. And the thing is, the solution is, I don't know. But we've got to keep the thing on the basic Jewish control of the organs of mind control, which is basically our media. And there's a lot of blacks that are waking up to the Jewish control. And what we got to do is, as regular old white people, Christians, whatever we are, Odinists, anything, we got to say, look, you can't throw us all in the same lump, because, see, unfortunately, we've got a burden, Kyle. The Jewish guy, he can run around in our sector because his skin is white a lot of times. And so we've got the extra burden that the Jewish guys that are really orchestrating a lot of this, and these guys have infiltrated the Vatican as well, they can look like a white dude. And see, that's the problem. So we've got an extra burden to say, hey, I know this. Just don't throw me under the bus with these with the Jewish gang out here, because, see, a lot of white people, they don't want to dominate you, black people. We don't want to dominate you, Hispanics in the world either. I want you to have your own land. I don't want to send some American corporation in to gut all your natural resources. I mean, I don't think that's cool. I mean, if it's a decent business deal, fine. But if it's a rape, I'm not cool with that, because, see, I believe in karma. You reap what you sow. And so, you know, they think that all white people want to just go plunder the world's resources and steal them from people, which is BS. I don't want to do that, mm-hmm. because I don't want the negative karma, you know, and so we've got to get that across too.
Yeah, I really do think that more black people are waking up to the fact of Jewish power and starting to differentiate between Jews and white people and realizing that a lot of these white people have been screwing them over, screwing the world over, are in fact Jews and don't identify themselves as being white unless it's politically convenient. And I do think that the timing of all of these recent race riots is a little bit suspect in that it coincides very much with this awakening of white people and black people and pretty much all people to the Jewish power. So I think what they're trying to do is really just get us at each other's throats, fighting each other while they run away, rubbing their hands and counting their shekels.
Yeah, and this Jade Helm weird trash going on with all the spec ops community in the military. I'm former Marine Corps, and so I watch the machinations of the Pentagon, which is occupied by a bunch of freak shows that serve the international bankers. And so, you know, people are freaking out about the Jade Helm, because, you know why? There's a tipping point where people are starting to just totally reject the political system as a bunch of controlled jerks. And every one of them's corrupt. They're on the take. Here's the thing. We got to go after the Bar Association.
Well, somebody seems to have dropped from the call. Robert, call back in, please. I definitely didn't drop him there. Maybe he was touching upon something a little too hot. Let's try this caller. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Just listening.
All right. I should have recognized that. Thanks for just listening. We might have the caller from Tampa Bay back. Is this the Tampa Bay caller or somebody else?
Yeah, it's me. I don't know what happened. I lost
Mike.
You know, but...
Yes. Welcome back.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's just it's always going to be a banker, and until people actually figure out that banker's got a face, they're not going to be able to dissect this whole mess, you know. And that's why I'm glad I found your show, because, like I said, there's not a whole lot, but you just touched on the point that everybody's waking up and all this stuff is happening everywhere. You got all these riots, and you know what's sparking it all.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting worse and worse.
Yeah, and I think that maybe we can use this to our benefit. We need to. You take what you're handed, you're given lemons, you got to make lemonade with it. Or hell, I just like putting lemons in water. Who cares? Whatever you're going to do, use them. Whatever you've got, use it. And we can use this to our advantage through propaganda. We just can't fall into the very reactionary camps that are only going to deal with the symptoms and not the actual underlying disease. Not addressing the parasites. You know, it's like you've got leeches. You got all these leeches. You got these Lyme disease ticks attached to you. And you're like, why am I sick? I've got a cough. I'm feverish. I'm lackadaisical. I don't get it. What's the problem here? You know? I must be a Tylenol deficiency. That's probably the problem. No, you got to take off the leeches and the parasites and the ticks. By the way, what's politics other than many ticks? Break that word down. Poly, many, ticks. Ticks, as in the bloodsuckers. That's what politics really is, it seems. Many bloodsuckers. Anything else you'd like to add?
I'm glad about the work you're doing with Goodrich.
Oh, great.
Showing people the truth about World War II, and a lot of people are waking up to that, and that's a really good thing, because I'm 33 now. We went to school. We were taught how horrible Germany was, Hitler, the Nazis, and all that shit. So you really
Holocaust.
Didn't want that. Yeah, of course. You didn't want that. You were, my school was really multicultural, actually. I went to a lot of schools, a military brat, anyway. People would point you out and call you Hitler and stuff like that. I have a ethnic name, so it's kind of hard. But I'm glad
you got the German guilt for having a Germanic last name.
I had it.
Yeah. Well,
but
I think
now it's a pride.
That's really changing now. You know, I think Germany was rated the number one loved country around the world recently. You know, the German World Cup soccer team was just beloved. Yeah. You know, Germans, I think, have made a huge comeback. And part of that has to do with the realizations of historical lies against them. And not caring about what Jews have to say about how evil they are, how evil they were, and how they just need to be held down forever in bondage, because if they ever rise again, it's just, oy vey, it's going to be another Shoah. You know, so I think their power really is waning, the Jewish control over our minds and of the German people and the German identity, the German name, reputation. And they're very much on the rise. You see this with Pegida, them marching in Dresden. It's just great signs abound. And hopefully Hellstorm will just be one more thing that helps to clear their name and gets people loving the German people for what they did, what they're doing, and what they can do, especially once they free themselves, once we all free ourselves from this slave system that we find ourselves in.
Oh, we're not allowed to. If you're white, you're not allowed to.
Well,
that.
Just, I mean, anybody with a little bit of intelligence who honestly looks at what the NSDAP did, you can see a complete blueprint for how to turn a country around in no time. We could do it. We really could do it. It's not that far fetched. It was done before. Mm-hmm.
You saw that how one of their guys wanted to adopt the plan of the Reich.
Oh, in Japan? You see that? Oh yeah, yeah. They have a still have a strong connection to Germany. It's unfortunate that at the time they didn't attack Russia like they were supposed to, because if they had opened up the front on the east, that would have really allowed the Reich the ability, you know, given them the ability to roll over the Soviet Union to the west. So if Japan had followed through on that, that would have been a game changer for them. But of course, Japan was dealing with one hell of a time with their own firebombings, say in Tokyo and elsewhere, and of course the Nagasaki and Hiroshima bombings, and they're still being attacked for their nationalism today. I think that is actually why Fukushima happened, is because they're not bending over and taking it as much as the elite would like them to. So that's my little theory on that one. I don't think it's actually too far-fetched. But it's good signs abound all over. And even this trial, they continue to roll out old, decrepit Nazis. You know, Simon Wiesenthal, Nazi hunters, you know, putting these guys on trial, 93 years old, charging this Oscar Groening guy with 300,000 counts of murder. Yeah, of course, anybody who's paying attention to should realize they've never took out a communist and put him up for trial. No, they wouldn't dare do that.
Nope. And that's why we have the world we have today, especially in America and the West.
No, the communists are our allies. They're our friends.
I never understood how... with Eisenhower, they actually started the campaign against it, and I guess that was just because of Stalin flushing the Jews out of Russia. But whatever.
Just some Jews.
What happened?
That's a whole other story. Lana Lochteff over at Red Ice Creations, the last show she did, which got her kicked off of her podcast, was on the Jewish Bolshevik takeover of Russia. And they do go into a little bit about how Stalin did purge some Jews from positions of power. But if you're going to be purging people from positions of power in Soviet Russia, inevitably there are going to be Jews, because they dominated all the positions of power for the most part. So it's inevitable. They end up eating their own oftentimes. So it doesn't mean that the later Soviet Union wasn't Jewish. Oh, it certainly was at its very core. It's just that some Jews fell victim to it. And that's what will happen in the system that they're trying to really hoist upon us all. There will be Jewish victims that are fed to this Jewish beast as well. They're willing to sacrifice their own for their greater good, for greater Israel, for greater world Jewish domination. They don't care. They don't care about some of the lower elements of their tribe. They don't identify with them so much. Yeah, so that's the state of affairs we're in today. We've got a whole lot of fronts to fight on, but we are making significant progress. And I think we need to read some of these bad things in the world that are happening as actually good signs, because we can use them, and also because I think our controllers, our enemies, are scared. They're losing power, and they're getting desperate. Well,
I agree.
Mike, it's good to hear from you. Thanks for calling in. I hope you call into some more shows.
Yep, I appreciate it.
Take care.
Appreciate everything you do.
Oh, sorry for cutting you off there. I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad people out there like yourself appreciate what I'm doing. I appreciate the listeners, and I appreciate the callers, and I appreciate the supporters. And if you want to contribute, leave some comments over at renegadebroadcasting.com. Write some articles, renegadetribune.com. Hellstormdocumentary.com. There will be a lot coming soon. It's going to be big, guys. And, of course, renegadebroadcasting.com. Please check out all of the great hosts here on the network.
Laws were laid down in the beginning of time. Do they decree a great cycle, or instead a straight line? Who now remembers what was once handed down? In this flood of distractions, must nobility drown? Where do you stand now that the center gave way? What promise of hope comes forth with each day? Are the words just echoes of an age-old lie, ever inflating as the end draws nigh? Churning and churning in the widening gyre, digging and wallowing in the thickening mire. Our designs much older, endurance no pain, but frenzied boredom, like those few who came before. I would know yet more. Who stands up right now? Who walks on all fours? In this race with suicide, who's keeping the score? What old gods have yet to play out their roles? What new ones will rise from the abyss of your souls?